Wow, okay, you were not kidding around with this deep dive request. I mean, the Enneagram.
Yeah.
You went all in. This stack of links is seriously impressive.
Well, it's a topic that deserves some serious attention.
I hear that. So we're not just dipping our toes in the water here. We're diving headfirst into the deep end of personality, right?
That's right. But it's even more than just personality. It's about understanding the core motivations, the fears, the why behind our actions and choices.
The stuff that really makes us tick.
Exactly. We often see how people act, but the Enneagram helps us understand the why behind those behaviors.
So instead of just labeling someone as, say, always striving for
It's
success.
about understanding whether that drive comes from a place of genuine passion or maybe a deep-seated fear of failure.
Ooh, getting deep. So it's like we're peeling back the layers of the onion, getting to that core motivation.
Exactly. And that's where the real insights lie.
And this can impact everything, not just how we see ourselves, but our relationships, our work, how we move through the world, right?
It's all connected.
Okay, so nine types, nine different ways of seeing the world. Give us the lay of the land.
All right, so we'll start with type one, the reformer. Think principled, idealistic, always striving to make things better.
Okay, I know a few type ones, always pushing for positive change.
Right, but at their core, there's this fear of being corrupt or defective, which fuels their drive to improve themselves and sometimes the world around them.
So it's not just about being a goody two-shoes, it's deeper than that.
Much deeper.
Okay, fascinating. What about type two, the helper? Always the first to lend a hand.
Exactly. Type twos are all about connection, nurturing others, but their core fear is often being unloved or unwanted.
So they shower others with love and support, hoping to receive it in return.
In a way, yes, they need to feel appreciated and valued.
Makes sense. And what about those high-achieving type threes? Always on the go, chasing those goals.
Type threes are ambitious, driven by success and recognition, adaptable, charming, they know how to shine.
But there's got to be more to it than meets the eye.
Always. Deep down, they often fear being worthless or inadequate, so they're constantly striving to prove their worth through external achievements.
So it's less about the achievement itself and more about what it represents.
Exactly. Validation, worthiness. Now, type four, the individualists. This is where things get interesting.
Lay it on me, what makes them tick?
Type fours are all about embracing their uniqueness, expressing their individuality. They're creative, sensitive souls drawn to authenticity.
The artists, the poets, the deep thinkers.
Often, yes. But their core fear is feeling flawed or insignificant, which can lead to a sense of being misunderstood or unseen.
So they crave being seen for who they truly are, but fear being judged for it. It's a tough balance.
It is.
Okay, what about type five? The investigator, always observing, analyzing, soaking up knowledge.
Type fives are knowledge seekers. Driven by a need to understand the world, they often retreat into their minds to process information.
But there's a reason for that, right?
Always. They have a deep-seated fear of being overwhelmed or depleted, so they conserve their energy and protect themselves by diving deep into their chosen areas of expertise.
So knowledge is their haven.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay, what about type six? The loyalists. Always there for you, rock solid.
Type sixes are all about security and loyalty. They crave stability, structure, and are deeply devoted to the people and causes they believe in.
The ones you can always count on.
Yes, but their core fear is feeling unsafe or unsupported.
So they're always looking out for potential threats, trying to stay one step ahead.
Exactly. And it can make them anxious, doubtful, even when things seem fine on the surface.
It's like they're always preparing for the what ifs.
Precisely.
Okay, time for the fun-loving type in. Type seven, the enthusiast, always up for an adventure.
Ah, yes. Type sevens are adventurers or optimists. They embrace life's pleasures, always seeking new experiences.
Sounds exhausting, but there's got to be more to it.
Always is. Underneath all that excitement is a core fear of being trapped or deprived of joy.
So they keep moving, keep experiencing to avoid those negative feelings.
Exactly. They fear boredom, pain, anything that might dampen their spirits.
Makes sense. Two more to go. What about type eight, the challenger? Our natural leaders.
Type eights are assertive, confident, with a strong sense of justice. They're not afraid to speak their minds or take charge.
Definitely not wallflowers.
Not at all. But their core fear lies in being controlled or vulnerable.
So they project strength to protect themselves.
Exactly. They need to be in control to feel safe.
Makes sense.
Well.
Okay, last but not least, type nine, the peacemaker. Everyone loves a peacemaker, right?
Type nines are all about harmony. They value peace in their environment and their relationship.
They're the mediators, the ones who bring people together.
They are, but their core fear is being overlooked or insignificant.
So they avoid conflict, even if it means suppressing their own needs.
Sometimes, yes, they want to keep the peace, even if it means fading into the background a little.
Wow, we've only just scratched the surface here, and I'm already seeing these types everywhere. It's like you've given me a new lens to view the world.
And we've only just begun.
Okay, wings. You mentioned those earlier. So we're talking about, like, literal wings?
Yeah.
Because that would be a game changer.
Not quite. But they do add a whole other dimension to the Enneagram. Think of it like this. You have your core type, right?
Right, our home base.
Exactly. But then you have this neighboring type that also influences you.
So it's not as simple as, I'm a type 4, case closed.
Mm-hmm.
There's more to it.
Way more. It's like having this secondary type mixed in, adding its own flavor to your core type.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Give me an example.
Okay, let's say you resonate with type 4, the individualist, right? But you also find yourself drawn to that type 3 drive for achievement, that desire for recognition.
So a type 4 with a 3 wing would be like?
He's super ambitious artist.
Well,
someone who craves authenticity but also wants to share their gifts with the world in a big way.
Okay, I get it. So they have that type 4 depth and creativity.
Yeah.
But with this added ambition,
yeah,
this drive to make a mark.
Yes. And it creates a different flavor than, say, a type 4 with a 5 wing. They'll still be introspective and sensitive, of course, but maybe more drawn to solitary pursuits, expressing themselves through writing or music.
This is so interesting. It's like you're adding different shades to a painting, creating something even richer and more complex.
That's a great way to put it. Wings highlight that even within a single type, there's a whole spectrum of expressions.
Okay, so wings, check. But you also mentioned something about stress and how our types shift under pressure.
Ah, yes. Stress points. We've all been there, right?
Oh, tell me about it. Deadline looming. Everything's a mess, not my finest hour.
Exactly. And under stress, our usual coping mechanisms can get a little wonky, and we might tap into the energy of another type to navigate those tough times.
So it's not that our core type changes completely, but it's like we adopt a different strategy, a different way of dealing with the pressure.
Yes. Like, for example, a type 9, the peacemaker, who's usually so easygoing. Under stress, they might suddenly become uncharacteristically assertive, even confrontational.
Whoa, really? That's quite a shift.
It is, but it's like they're tapping into that type 6 energy, that need to protect themselves and create a sense of security when they feel threatened.
Fascinating. So it's like a defense mechanism, a way of coping when their usual approach isn't working. And I'm guessing there's a flip side to this, right? What about when things are good?
Absolutely. Just like we have stress points, we also have growth points.
So under pressure, we might temporarily devolve into less healthy patterns, but when we're thriving, we can actually evolve into a more integrated, healthier version of ourselves.
Exactly. It's about tapping into the potential that lies within each type. Like a type 6, who often struggles with anxiety and worry, can tap into that relaxed and trusting energy of a type 9 when they feel safe and supported.
So instead of always anticipating the worst, they can actually relax and go with the flow.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of the Enneagram. It shows us that growth is always possible. But I realize this is a lot to take in.
My brain's doing backflips over here. Is there a way to, like, organize all this information to see the connections more clearly?
There is. Ever heard of the Enneagram triads?
Triads. Tell me more.
So the triads group the 9 types based on how they relate to their emotions, or sometimes how they try to avoid their emotions.
Okay, this sounds juicy.
It is. We've got the body triad types 8, 9, and 1. They experience the world very viscerally, very much in the here and now. They're action oriented.
So the challenger, the peacemaker, and the reformer, they're all about taking action, just in their own ways.
Exactly. Then we have the heart triad types 2, 3, and 4, all about feelings, relationships, connecting with others.
The helper, the achiever, and the individualist. They're definitely in tune with their emotions.
Right. And finally, the head triad types 5, 6, and 7, leading with their minds, analyzing, strategizing.
The investigator, the loyalist, and the enthusiast, always trying to make sense of the world through information and experiences.
You got it. Now, remember, these are broad strokes, of course. We all have access to all 3 centers, body, heart, and mind.
Right. It's not like we're limited to just one.
Exactly. But we tend to have a home base, a way of approaching the world that feels most natural. And understanding these triads can be so helpful, especially in relationships.
Okay, I see that. Like, if you're in a relationship with someone who's in a different triad, you might realize you express love and affection in totally different ways.
Exactly. And instead of getting frustrated or feeling misunderstood, you can start to appreciate those differences.
This is all starting to make so much sense. Like, we're building this incredible map of human personality.
And the most fascinating part is still to come, exploring the core fears and motivations that drive each type.
Okay, I'm ready. Let's dive in. All right, core fears and motivations. This is where it gets really real.
It's true. This part can be a little uncomfortable because it's about those deep-seated anxieties that drive us, often unconsciously.
But also super insightful. Because once we understand those fears, we can start to work with them instead of letting them control us right now.
Exactly. It's about bringing those subconscious patterns into conscious awareness. And those Enneagram statements we mentioned earlier, they're a great place to start.
They really got me thinking, like that one for type one, the reformer, about how their desire for order often stems from a fear of chaos.
Right. It's like they're trying to create a sense of control in a world that often feels very unpredictable.
And that can manifest in so many ways, from needing their pantry to be perfectly organized to being drawn to careers with clear rules and structures like law or accounting.
Absolutely. But when that fear gets out of whack, it can lead to rigidity, judgment, even a resistance to change, which can be tough for them and everyone around them.
And then there's the flip side, their core motivation. They genuinely want to make things better, to be good, right?
Absolutely. They're often drawn to social justice, to fixing problems, to leaving the world a better place than they found it.
Okay, what about type two, the helper? That statement about confusing being needed with being loved really struck a chord.
That one's a biggie for type twos. They're so focused on giving to others that they can lose sight of their own needs.
I've totally seen that. They can get so caught up in being the good friend or the supportive partner that they forget to check in with themselves.
Yes, and then they end up feeling resentful or unappreciated because their needs aren't being met, and it can be hard for them to even recognize those needs, let alone express them.
It's like their sense of worth becomes tied to how much they're doing for others.
Exactly. So it's about learning to receive, about setting healthy boundaries, about recognizing that their worthiness is inherent.
So much to unpack there. All right, what about type three, the achiever? They're always on the go, so driven.
And there's that statement about them sometimes confusing success with happiness.
Right, it's like they're always chasing the next goal, the next promotion, but they rarely stop to ask themselves, is this actually making me happy?
And that's because their core fear is often rooted in feeling inadequate or worthless.
So they achieve to prove themselves, not necessarily because they're passionate about what they're doing.
It can be a bit of a trap, but when they can connect with their authentic desires, their true passions, that's where the magic happens.
This is fascinating. Okay, type four, the individualist. That statement about clinging to melancholy, that one hit hard.
Type fours feel things deeply, and sometimes they can get a little attached to their sadness.
It's like they see beauty in those darker emotions, a sense of depth that feels more real than surface-level happiness.
And that ties into their core fear of being flawed or insignificant. They might unconsciously believe that their pain or their suffering is what makes them special, what separates them from the crowd.
So it's about learning to embrace all of their emotions, the light and the dark, without judgment.
Beautifully said. Okay, on to type five, the investigator. Always seeking knowledge, always exploring new ideas.
But there's that statement about knowledge sometimes being a distraction from life's uncertainties.
Ah, yes. Type fives crave knowledge, but it can become a way of keeping the world at arm's length.
Like if they can just understand everything, then they'll be safe.
Exactly. Because their core fear is being overwhelmed or depleted, so they build these fortresses of knowledge to protect themselves from the messiness of life.
It's a delicate balance, isn't it? The pursuit of knowledge versus actually engaging with the world.
It is.
Okay, what about type six, the loyalist? Always prepared, always looking out for potential threats.
And there's that statement about how all that preparing can sometimes keep them from enjoying the present moment.
It's like they're so busy worrying about what might go wrong that they miss out on the good stuff that's happening right now.
Exactly. Because their core fear is feeling unsafe or unsupported, they can get stuck in this loop of anxiety and worry. So it's about learning to find that sense of safety within themselves.
So that they can relax and trust that things will work out, even if they don't have all the answers.
Exactly. Okay, how are we doing? Ready for a few more?
Hit me. Three more to go, right?
You got it. Type seven are enthusiasts. They always bring the energy, always up for a good time.
But there's a depth to them, too. I remember that statement about their optimism sometimes being a form of denial.
It can be. Type 7s have this amazing ability to focus on the positive, but sometimes that means avoiding the not-so-pleasant parts of life.
Because their core fear is being trapped or deprived of joy.
Exactly. So they keep themselves busy, always seeking the next adventure, the next source of excitement.
Makes sense. But it's about finding that balance between chasing happiness and actually experiencing the full spectrum of life.
Well said.
Okay, two more. What about type 8, the challenger? Always willing to stand up for what they believe in.
And there's that statement about how that fighting spirit can sometimes lead to disconnection from others.
Because their need for control comes from a place of wanting to feel safe.
Right.
Exactly. And when that fear gets triggered, they can become very confrontational, even domineering.
It's like they're building walls to protect themselves, even if it means pushing people away.
It's a common pattern. But the beautiful thing is that once they realize this, they can start to soften, to let people in, and experience a whole new level of connection.
Okay, last but not least, Type 9, the peacemaker.
The peacemakers of the Enneagram. Always seeking harmony, always trying to make everyone happy.
Except for themselves sometimes.
Yeah.
That statement about prioritizing everyone else's needs above their own, that's a big one.
It's their superpower and their Achilles heel. They're so good at seeing all sides, at creating a sense of peace, that they can easily fade into the background.
And then they wonder why they feel invisible.
Exactly. So it's about finding their voice, setting boundaries, and recognizing that their needs are just as important as everyone else's.
This has been amazing. It's like we've just taken a crash course in human nature in all its messy glory.
And we've only just scratched the surface. The Enneagram is a lifelong journey of self-discovery.
And it's not just about understanding ourselves, right? It's about understanding the people in our lives, too.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that everyone is operating from their own unique set of fears and motivations. And when we can approach each other with that understanding, our relationships transform.
I love that. So for our listeners who are just beginning their Enneagram journey, what's the most important thing to remember?
Be curious, be open, and most importantly, be kind to yourself. The Enneagram is a tool for growth, not judgment. So explore the 9 types, try on different descriptions, and see what resonates. You might be surprised by what you discover.
What a wonderful way to end our deep dive. This has been so insightful. And to all our listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey of self-discovery. Until next time, keep exploring.